Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great podcast, Swagoo and Perk, an ESPN podcast led by its namesake hosts, Marcus Spears, Swagoo, and Kendrick Perkins, with new episodes every Tuesday morning. Spears and Perkins will bring listeners the latest NBA and NFL news, as well as a look inside their lives, career journey, with can't-miss conversations. That's Swagoo and Perk. Listen wherever you get your podcasts, and also available on ESPN's YouTube channel. Also, across all of ESPN, we're kicking off V-Week on November 30th. We do it every year around the start of college basketball season to honor our teammate Jim Valvano by supporting the V Foundation for Cancer Research, the foundation he announced in his unforgettable ESPY speech so many years ago. And Jim's message of don't give up, don't ever give up, means more to us this year than ever before. We're seeing it hit especially close to home with our beloved teammate and cancer fundraising champion Dick Vitale and his recent cancer diagnosis. If you are able to join us today in supporting the V Foundation for Cancer Research, you can give by going to v.org/donate. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest joining us. On with us now. Check him out at Channel 6. Check him out, Thinking Out Loud, which will be doing a show. They're on the SEC Network, and they will be on for the SEC Championship game, I believe, at noon. And he is the best college football writer in America. Spencer Hall, what's going on, man?
Thank you. You know, you're great with the reel. I get the whole resume read. Like, I'm like, oh, did I do all that?
Yeah. I'm glad I memorized it all. Because I'd be like, damn, go ahead and tell the people what you do. My fault. I had a hard time keeping it straight this time. But no, we all up to speed now, baby.
I forget occasionally some things, right? I have forgotten the Thinking Out Loud drop, in case you want to talk about college football, which has nothing going on, where we're in the last week of the season, and we have the fewest number of games for any week.
Yes.
And we have the absolute highest number, maximum number of words, sound, tweets, everything. It's loud. It has been all season. All because we can't keep people hired.
Yes. Now, by the way, before we get to that, I feel like we need to tell the people, though, about the idea that we had, that we're thinking about doing, the Twitch thing.
That's a great idea, because I don't fully know, because, you know, you and I, our musical taste overlap somewhat, and finding this, that little overlap area, is going to be interesting. The idea that Bo and I had is that on my Twitch stream, or on his, if he grabs one, is to take an album and just have a listening party where you and I listen to it, occasionally pause if there's something worth talking about, if there's a particular bit or a guest spot or something we want to talk about. But on the whole, just let it play and talk about it. We won't have a time for this, right? We're just going to announce it like day of, and we'll sit down and we'll go through the whole album.
Yep. And by the way, our taste overlap greatly. It's awareness, right? Like, I always find that if one of us puts the other on something they're not up on, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm with this. It's like, no, you know, I actually have not sat down and listened to a Waylon Jennings album before. Oh, okay, boom, there we go. This'll do. I can do things with this.
Yeah, so please, if you are hearing this and you go, ooh, I have a suggestion, and you can at either one of us on Twitter. I think that's probably the best way to do it. At Bomani Jones on Twitter, at EDSBS. Go ahead, hit us up. Let us know. What do you want us to listen to? Because we've done a Stevie episode somewhat, but we've talked a lot about Stevie. That's always on deck. I'm never going to say no to a Stevie record. But, like, get far afield. Whatever album you think, whatever classic album you think we need to listen to, it's all on.
Yeah, don't be trying to impress us with your obscurity, though, because we want other people to actually check this shit out, too. Like, that's a very important point. Like your favorite album that sold like 15 copies, that's not really going to work, right? Like, I have a lot of albums that I really love, but unfortunately, I know that you people probably are unaware of. Ergo, therefore, we don't need 15 people just popping in and being like, I don't know what this shit is, and then keep it going. You know what I'm saying? So, like, yeah, get far afield, but, you know, don't be surprised when you pop up and you're like, yo, U2 Pop, that's what we want to do. No, we're not. Although, U2 Pop, better than you remember, in case you get a chance to go back and check it out.
Listen, most of those post-Joshua Tree albums are a little bit better than you remember. Notice I put a little bit in there. They're a little bit better than you remember. Don't also come in, it's like, don't make me hate. Don't make me say, hey, listen, I love King Ghidorah. I love MF Doom. I love obscure weirdo rappers. We're not going to do your obscure weirdo rap album.
Not having it.
Doom, we're going to do like the big classics. The chances are we're probably not doing MF Doom.
Yeah. Food. That's probably where we're going. Just so you know, that would probably be the place that we wound up in is Food. You know why? Because that's the one I can name off the top of my head. So, way I want to start this to get people like a full understanding of the madness that has taken place over the course of the last few days. When the Texas job came open in 2014, after the 2014 season, Texas boosters made the Nick Saban play. And it is believed by a lot of people that they would have gotten Saban, except they bungled it so bad on getting Mac out of there that it would have been a bad look for Saban for him to go in there and take it. But the boosters felt like they'd done their job and they landed Saban. And then it was the AD's job to get Mac out of there. And then they did not do it. But the thing was with that, I think Jim Harbaugh's name had also come up at one point where people were talking about him going to Texas. But that doesn't really happen. Like, in spite of what people think, especially like in college, people don't go from big college job to big college job. Like, we went through this a while ago, like somebody making a move like that at the highest levels of the sport. And the closest I could come up with was when Johnny Majors left Pittsburgh after the 1976 season and then went to Tennessee. But Johnny Majors going to Tennessee is something different. You know what I mean? And the money was not what it was in college sports now, and college football in particular. So like even Jackie Sherrill going from Pitt to Texas A&M, it was more likely that somebody would go from a job like Pitt down to a job like Texas A&M, which is what it was at the time, just for you youngsters. Pitt was definitely a more high-profile job than Texas A&M. That's what it would be. This day and age, where your regular job can just pony up, people don't do that. That's not what it is. And then we look up and we're hearing Lincoln Riley is going to LSU, right? And I firmly believe that Lincoln Riley was going to LSU because too many people at LSU were saying Lincoln Riley is coming. We got people associated with the program start following Lincoln Riley. Players, recruits, they start following Lincoln Riley. The next thing you know, Lincoln Riley gets up at the press conference after they lose to Oklahoma State, which, by the way, never happens. But we're not even thinking about that. Oklahoma State is a top five team with a good, like a legitimate chance to be in the playoff. All this stuff. Don't matter. Lincoln Riley got up at that press conference and was like, whoa, 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 I'm not going to LSU. And then the next day he went to USC. When has that happened?
Uh-uh. Wasn't going to LSU, buddy. Now, where am I going? You should ask that follow-up. And in case you think it's improbable, it just happened. The only comparison, and it's a weird one now, especially in light of the last 15 years have gone, was Dennis Franchione leaving Alabama after, you know, some pretty good years there, Texas A&M. Now, admittedly, the brands right now make that look a lot crazier than it was at the time because Alabama was in a lull. Alabama was the kind of team that, yeah, could win 9 or 10 games, but they could just as easily collapse and go back down to 6. They weren't the same machine. They hadn't been fully Sabanized at that point. Right now, Alabama, for the next 5 to 10 years, just based on like the exhaust, based on like the accumulated credit of all of the momentum that they have under Saban, the next 5 to 10 years, take that job. You're going to get a big buyout and you're probably going to have a roster full of more talent than you've ever messed with in your life. Even if you go out the next year and you do zero recruiting, you'll still have a pretty good roster for 2 or 3 years until the Larry Coker effect kicks in and you start sliding back down and being merely good. You haven't managed to maintain the same fearsome level of recruiting. I think what you've seen here too with Riley leaving for USC, which is Oklahoma to USC, by the way, is like, that is some luxury brand switching. I know USC is a little bit down at the moment, but that program with its advantages, if you get it into high gear, goes as fast as any program in the nation. But going from OU, particularly too, like leaving the security of arms that were ready to hold you for a decade plus, Oklahoma has not had a modern coaching search since 1999. What you're seeing here is you're seeing realignment and sort of the overall shuffling of conferences and teams finally having an impact on labor hires. I don't think Lincoln Riley makes that jump as assuredly to USC if Oklahoma wasn't bound for the SEC. They weren't going to face a full SEC schedule in a much tougher conference. People have said, well, is he scared of that? Let's talk about strategic decision making and not emotional decision making. Where do you think you're going to make the most secure hay for the next decade if you're Lincoln Riley? Do you think it's going into the SEC where you're going to have to accept losing 2-3 games a year as a good team? Everybody in the SEC, by the way, get used to losing more games. That's going to happen. More competition in there. Make your Texas jokes, if you will. I'm not personally blowing smoke up Bo's ass here. They're not going to be terrible forever. And Oklahoma's not going to be great forever, especially if they're not managed correctly. And Oklahoma's always had an unusual position recruiting-wise because they recruit a lot better than you think, and they recruit nationally. Being in Norman is just a little bit different than if I'm recruiting you to, say, L.A. Well, Oklahoma recruited L.A. really well. Who did they just hire? They just hired a lot of the staffers who were responsible for that.
Dude, and so USC, a couple things. One, the Oklahoma Modern Coaching Search, you're right. They haven't had one since 1999. But even that wasn't really a search. There was one obvious person to hire in that hiring cycle. And when you look back on it, considering, and for those who don't remember, Stoops was the defensive coordinator at Florida under Steve Spurrier after Spurrier realized, I guess I'm just going to have to actually play some defense here, right? Well, we can't keep running a 4-4-1 in the 1990s. Got it. Okay. They went and hired Stoops, who I guess was at Kansas State before that. And it was clear that Stoops was going to be running somebody's program. And he was the guy who had the luxury of, I'm going to just post up until the right job comes up. And the right job came up, and it was Oklahoma. And boom, they did that. Before that, like even John Blake, they didn't really run a search. Barry Switzer made a decision, and they decided that they were going to hire him. Like, this is the first time they really had to go look for a coach since like 1947. And what I think is interesting now about the OU job is a significant part of the consistency of OU's success, not the height of it, but the consistency of it, was getting to play in the Big Eight for a long time. Like, the Big 12 was a much stronger conference than the Big Eight, but you get to play in the Big Eight. Like, Barry Switzer never finished lower than second in the Big Eight in the entirety of his time there. Tom Osborne, I don't think, ever finished lower than second in the Big Eight in his time there. Maybe third. But you see what I'm saying? Like, the same two teams were on top all the time. OU is going to go to a place where, like, every now and then Stoops would have an 8-5 season or something like that. But no. They're going to go down there, and it's going to be some heavy hitters. But here's what Oklahoma's going to do when they get down with them heavy hitters. Step it up. Because nobody cares about being good at football, maybe other than Alabama's probably the only one. But like OU, I tell people this all the time. If you read Barry Switzer's autobiography, there's a chapter written by the then president of the university who explained that during the Dust Bowl, with the Grapes of Wrath and everything, the image of Oklahoma as a state across the country was so bad. Like, Okie, that was a slur. Like, the reputation was so bad that they needed something that the people could be proud of, and they decided it was going to be that football team. They had been willing to do whatever cheating had to be done, to put whatever money in had to be put in, and they've done it, and they've also been an incredibly well-run program. Now Lincoln Riley going over there to USC, and USC to me now, I didn't even talk to you about this. I'm curious what you think about this. It's kind of moving to me in mind is kind of that Alabama space where there are two kinds of coaches at Alabama. You win a championship or you get fired fast. That's it. Like, when you look at that USC history, you got John McKay, you got John Robinson, you got Pete Carroll, and then you got a random smattering of dudes who just didn't hang around for very long.
This is a what have you done for me lately program. We say that there's a lot of cult of personalities in college football, and that is still true. There are still places where there is very much a cult of personality for one dude. Some of those are a little quieter than others. I think Mike Gundy can do a lot of things at Oklahoma State that you might not be able to do at other places because he's the only guy who's made that thing stand this long. One of the most extraordinary runs in college football that is ongoing is Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State. If you look, the history of their franchise has been boo-boo. And that's one of the reasons they put up with repeated flirtations with other programs, is he's made them something not terrible. Now, if you look at USC, if you are a dude who is not going to make it happen, the program will be fine without you. They will continue to move on. You need the machine. You need everything that USC has. USC's machine, in large part, has been badly mismanaged over the past 15 years, that late Pete Carroll stage. They really thought they could just roll people out there. That also goes in terms of everybody that you get off the field, all the coaches. They just thought they could just keep putting staffers in. They kept hiring the same dude over and over again. They hired Lane Kiffin, then they hired other Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian, and then they hired milquetoast version of both of those guys in the form of Clay Helton. Are you spoiled? Yeah, that's a spoiled program. That's a program that had been so successful and was so didn't really have any competition. What was USC's context for success? UCLA's across town. Train wreck forever. Even when UCLA's been pretty good, the bottom was never very far away. Oregon, like, I know they play Oregon, and I know they're Pac-12 rivals in the modern sense. I don't think those programs evaluate each other on the same level. Their metrics and what they understand as success It's very different historically. USC, I think, just expects to be like generationally good, even if we know that isn't possible without a coach who sort of changes the way they do everything. Carroll was not a popular hire. He was way down on the list of dudes, and he had failed before and then changed the way they did everything. Also, he's a singular talent. A lot of the times when you go, well, why are schools paying this much money? Okay, there's two things. One, ADs are winless. ADs are winless in negotiations. Every single time they go in and they get absolutely choke slammed in every single one of these negotiations against a coach because they all need a generational talent. They all need somebody who's going to help them keep their job. And they need somebody who is going to be markedly different. And that markedly different thing is indeed rare. You know, if you say, hey, would you pay that much for Pete Carroll? For 1999 Pete Carroll? Yeah, because that dude got 4 hours sleep a night. And all he did was recruit and work for your program and occasionally boogie board. That was all that dude did. So those guys are rare, and maintaining that kind of pace is rare. And that's why Alabama pays all that money for Nick Saban, because that man has one thing in his life, and then sometimes he plays golf.
Yeah. And see, here's the other thing about the USC job that I think is lost. Like, here's the biggest reason why we're here right now. In 2020, USC had the number 71 recruiting class in America per Rivals. They recruited one of the top 25 players in the entire state of California. Only one of them. In this transfer portal world, you can kind of fix that problem, right? Like, you could kind of correct that one and get a do-over on that. But they actually, when I was just looking at the recruiting stuff not too long ago, they actually have not recruited as poorly as it felt like. Like, that year was the big one where people were like, Clay Helton ain't going to be there. We ain't going there, right? Like, otherwise, you look at it, they had some players. They just weren't well coached. Like, getting this thing back up and running isn't going to be nearly as difficult. I always felt like the problem with USC, where I would be concerned, is what assistant coaches get paid is a king's ransom in Norman, Oklahoma. It's a king's ransom in College Station, Texas. You might have a roommate in L.A. if you want to live close to your job, but not live too close to your job, because they did used to call USC the University of South Central.
That is correct. And location-wise, LA is always a challenge, because if you say, ooh, I can get a little more house over here, that over there is another 45 minutes in traffic. Easy. And you're in a job where you're going to be spending a lot of hours at the office. You're going to be going to the airport a lot. These sound like silly considerations. They're not, especially like talk to anybody who has ever worked at Stanford. Like, Stanford had to use on-campus housing for assistants and for staffers. That's how expensive things are in Palo Alto. So your assistants pool matters. The logistics of the program matter a lot. Like, you go, okay, man, how on earth is Alabama this good at football? Like, that is a question. If you think like, okay, where am I going to find the best possible teams? If you are a person who knew nothing about sports, absolutely nothing, you said, where are people going to be good? You go, well, probably where they got the most money. That's my guess, right? And then you go, well, who's at the top of this sport? Alabama and Clemson. Well, what's not making sense here? Well, what's not making sense is that, one, the money does go a lot further in those places. Two, those places have no distractions. None. Mm-hmm. And that is a big thing at USC, is distractions, is making sure that you keep everyone on the same page and that you are not distracted by everything that LA can throw at you in terms of non-football things. We've talked with people all the time who are athletes who are just like, this is not the typical college experience. Like, if you talk to anybody who was on a roster and then spent their senior year off that roster, that senior year is like, it's like getting out of prison. Like, I didn't know things could be like this, right? It's just, it's an entirely different world. And at places like Alabama and Clemson, you can keep people in that tunnel pretty easily. The bigger the stage and the more things there are to do, the harder it is to convince everybody that football is absolutely the most important thing in your life. And that is where name, image, and likeness comes in, because name, image, and likeness, I know, is killing some coaches right now. Not in terms of actually making their lives harder, but of sucking attention away for just a second, of making football something that is 1%, 2% less important in your life when you're thinking about, well, I got to manage my profile. I got to manage all this. It's time. It adds up. And that's the sort of thing that coaches absolutely obsess and hate, because they can't control it. They have to give players some autonomy in that, and they have to figure out a way to get their programs to work with it. These are all new skills. They're all new dynamics, and there's something that even the young guys don't fully know how to negotiate yet.
Yeah. But see, the one plus, though, I feel like if you're an assistant being in Norman or somewhere like that versus LA, it all depends on if you care if people know who you are, right? Like, if you are in Norman, people care who you are. Like, one thing that happened with Nick Saban, him leaving the Dolphins job, because people are like, oh, Saban was such a failure. He hadn't gotten started yet, but he wasn't a failure. They weren't running him out of the joint. They actually wanted him to stay in Miami. But one of the reasons why he wanted to go back to college was, in college, being the wife of the head coach means something. Nobody cares who Nick Saban's wife is in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Palm Beach, Davie. They don't care nothing about no Miss Terry in any of those places. But in Tuscaloosa, when you decide that you're going to put AJ McCarron's girlfriend on the cover of the local magazine, you got to put Miss Terry on the cover of that thing too, right? Like, we know her name. That's the difference. So if you're an assistant, maybe, you know, depending on what your wiring is, but if you out here, you know, you like to get out here in these streets, like to see what you could do, like to see if you could make it happen. Yeah, L.A. dog. Like I thought about this with Riley, and I think this is an underrated part of it, because that dude takes the job and then calls the staff, the ones he likes, and is like, y'all trying to roll? And they like, yeah. And next thing you know, these dudes are on a plane. They got a bag. Ain't nobody sold the house. Ain't nobody thought about selling the house. Ain't nobody making no moves. None of that. Like, that's the wildest thing about this with college football to me is, really, they hit Lincoln Riley and they're like, you want to come? Yeah. So you'll be here tomorrow? Yeah. I could not imagine my life moving in that kind of breakneck speed on something that's that important. I don't even have a place to stay there.
You want to know somebody who will pull the trigger on an extended stay hotel faster than any human being on the planet? It's an assistant coach. Hey, you know what? My shampoo comes in tiny little bottles for the next month and a half while somebody else, probably my poor spouse, figures out what to do with the house, with the dog, the kids, everything else. They just jump. Guess what you could do in LA that you can't do in Norman? You can go get a beer. And nobody will worry, right? Nobody will wonder. You can go to the beach for a second, all right? On your little highly coordinated schedule that your obsessive, weird aggro coach has printed out for you. It says 9:15, show up for recruiting session. Between 8:45 and 9, I might be able to go do something else for just 15 minutes. And that'll make all the difference. You know, that'll be all you need to get through the day. That's what you can get if you go to LA, because they don't care. They don't call your wife Miss Terry. They call her Terry. That's what they would call her. The insolence of not giving the miss. Everything in a program where it's all about football, it has its own gravity and it gets its own honorifics, right? Even your kids, man. Like, think about that. Kids-wise, you go to LA, who gives a shit about your dad being the coach at USC in LA? All right? Nobody, they might not know. There will be people in that city who will have no clue that USC has a football team, and that might be what you want. Or it might not be what you want. You want to leverage that. There are all kinds of dynamics that sort of determine where people go and what they want.
If you are a really good player, if you are a star caliber player, I don't know if there's any place to be that for your long-term lifetime earnings that's better for being that than being at USC. Right. So like if name, image and likeness had existed around the Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart would have made all the money because he won a Heisman and then came back. Right. The reason that O.J. Simpson could be the pioneer black dude in advertising is because he went to USC. The people who were making those decisions for Hertz are USC grads. Right. Like there's a wing of people and then all the, you know, just general Hollywood type stuff and everything else. Like these dudes that were willing to leave L.A. to go to Oklahoma to play for Lincoln Riley. Oh, they bringing ass. They staying asses right home. Absolutely right home. Because they like, hey, you know, now that I think about this, that didn't make any sense at all what I was about to do.
You know, though, there is a niche here, a demographic I find fascinating, because you and I are talking about macro. We're talking about, OK, somebody who's going to be a star, go to the NFL, get their name, image and likeness, and roll it up into something which is their personal brand. Down the road, we're going to have a podcast. We're going to have a channel. I'm going to have several major endorsements. I'm going to have relationships with brands. That's cool. There's another tier to that, though. And I think it's something that probably one very savvy coach will figure out. And it is the mid-range local hero. If I can get you in and you're a 3 or 4 star, okay, cool. Cool. Like, I'm going to work that hard. I have a little bit of motivation. I'm going to be as good a player as I can be for this program. But what if I'm real likable? Right? What if I'm that guy who I know, hey man, I may not be Hollywood, but I can definitely run Atlanta for a while. Okay? Because you and I have both seen, okay? In Atlanta, there is a billboard for Morgan & Morgan. Gonna give them some free shine here. And remember that when I get arrested. But Morgan & Morgan has the billboard with Jordan Davis.
Yeah, it's a law firm whose tagline is size matters.
Size matters. Bigger is better. And Jordan Davis is on the billboard in downtown Atlanta for the Athens, Georgia Bulldogs. You got Jordan Davis looming over the interstate, all 6 foot billion of him.
Yes.
Every day. That's the niche I think that like local guys can kill with. What if I am the Shaq of your program? What if I will shill for literally anything? If I'm that dude, I can do real well at a place like that. You know, like I think whoever gets that for Texas A&M, you have an income stream for life.
Well, I was actually thinking like the next Kyler Murray, right? And so for people who don't understand this about Kyler Murray, there's a legitimate argument that Kyler Murray is the greatest high school football player in the history of the state of Texas, right? Like he's from the Dallas area, but he was a star among his peers when he was in high school. Like the guys who went to high school around that time would just marvel and talk about Kyler Murray. If I'm Kyler Murray, do you realize the money that he could have made going to SMU? Like literally, I mean, I wouldn't have done it, but the money he could have made staying in Dallas as the guy he was and like boosting up that program, he could have become a zillionaire. Like there's so many different levels to the money. Like we think about like our guys in, you know, in Louisiana in particular, if there's another one of those like local superstar types that come out of Louisiana, like it would have been a much different mathematical situation for any of those Manning boys if there were name, image, and likeness then, with them being Archie's kid and them being from New Orleans. And I guess LSU stunk then, so it was a different math for them to, you know, to go ahead and do. But, oh, my bad. Speaking of LSU. Is it possible for a program to hire a better coach than Brian Kelly, who is a really good coach, and me look up and be like, oh, wow, this seems like a horrible idea?
I think the idea of Brian Kelly in general is that he's so abrasive that the notion of him walking into any room is repellent. You just go, oh man, the mood just died.
Yeah.
Because like a guy who is just a cop in any situation, it's just zero fun. Just a guy who when he walks in, the oxygen levels just get a little bit lower for anybody who would like to smile, have fun, or enjoy college football, because he does not look like a guy who does that. He does, however, produce really, really good teams. So the bind here that you find yourself in is going, they went out and hired the exact opposite of Ed Orgeron. They went and hired somebody who, I cannot think of somebody who at least on the North American continent, has less to do with Louisiana State University and its history than Brian Kelly. Like nothing. There's just no overlap whatsoever, right? They both speak English, kind of.
Catholic?
I mean, yeah, maybe. But like, I think that's a part of it. And maybe that's compatible with, you know, predominantly Catholic Southern Louisiana. But on the whole, what does this man have that Ed Orgeron also has? Like
nothing. Nothing.
Not a national title.
Yeah.
That's the reason we're here, y'all. It's because Brian Kelly was sitting at Notre Dame and he goes, I have done everything in my power to put this team into a national championship and it's not happening. At this point, could you argue with any clarity and say he hasn't done everything he could do to put them in the spot to win a national title? No, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what else you could do.
Do you know how hard it is to win when every one of your players has to be able to pass calculus as a freshman? You have to have 85 elite football players who can also pass calculus as freshmen, because that's something Notre Dame is not budging on. Like, as much as we get on Notre Dame and got all kinds of things to say about them, they walk the walk on that stuff, right? Like, they've made a decision that they want to do this a certain way, and a lot of people talk that, but don't actually do it. Notre Dame has been that, right? Like, Lou Holtz got them to be a little more flexible about it, but in the end, they still have their requirements, and you got to respect that fact. So now you telling Brian Kelly, I ain't got to get calculus players no more? You telling me that I don't need to look at what their math scores were? I can just get dudes who play ball? Are you serious? So he's going to get down there, and the problem is he can't handle no bad times, right? Like nothing. And at LSU, bad times is 10-2.
Oh, it's 10-2, and you're going to lose somebody you don't want to lose to. That's it. Like, the thing that adds up when you talk about an SEC schedule is you have certain losses that become intolerable. And as much as LSU says they have no rivals, we have no rivals, you know? We're better than everybody. We don't regard anybody on our level, because that's what you need to have a rival. You can't lose to Ole Miss. You can't lose repeatedly to Alabama. You can't. Like, ultimately, you know, you can lose tight to Alabama, but you can't get blown out. You can't lose to Arkansas, right? Even though that's happened pretty recently. You can't lose to those teams. They become repeated irritants that ultimately your employers will no longer be able to tolerate. The leash is a lot shorter. Gainesville's a great example of this because Florida, if you want to know the things that added up for Dan Mullen, you go, why are we losing to Kentucky twice? Why? You might, you know, one might be a lightning strike, but why are you losing twice to Kentucky? Rhetorically, those are things you can't come back from. You really can't. Now, is he going to recruit well? Yeah, everyone at LSU recruits really well. Everyone. Like, I mean, I think the person who didn't recruit well last was Curly Hallman. But everybody else, if you can say, hey, mom, you can come watch me in Baton Rouge. It's less than 2 hours away. The talent you can get within a two-hour radius at LSU is bonkers. Absolutely bonkers. And then you add to that, one thing I don't get, one complaint I don't get is people have been saying, oh, man, like, how's Brian Kelly going to learn how to recruit down there? Where do you think he's been? For some of these recruits, he's in the same room. Like, that's for a lot of these guys, he's at least in the same room and knows who they are. But I've already been talking to him. That part's not going to be hard, you know? I don't even know if they need to get that particularly regional. Usually you have one or two guys on staff who are like local jobbers, right? Who are like, yeah, I know all the high school guys here. Yeah, they're going to need some of that. But on the whole, they're going to be fine at recruiting, and they're going to win games. They're going to win a lot of games. It's just about the ones you lose.
And Brian Kelly going to need to learn, man. You ain't going to be down there hollering at so many of these certain people, right? Like, Nick Saban got himself to a point where he could holler at Skip Bertman, right? Like it's just kind of some wild stuff. You get there. But he's going to have to figure out some level of charm because them folks down there, I don't even, like, demanding doesn't even necessarily feel fair. Because, like, if Les Miles had put up the same records he did in the last 5 or 6 years that he was there, but just one more win against Alabama, just kind of sprinkled in there, he might have been able to keep the job. But the argument for firing Les really was, we can't lose to Alabama 5 years in a row. Like, losing to them even, like, 3 out of 5, we can live with that. But we can't lose to them no 5 years in a row. Man, Brian Kelly get down there and get spanked by Saban. The look on his face and the way he deals and getting down there and blaming those players. Nah, man, these players got more options for leaving you, buddy.
No, and also those players, by the way, the fan-player relationship at LSU, it's not one of these places where they necessarily specifically root for the jersey. Louisiana State fans, on the whole, have a relationship with players which is borders on the personal. I like Tyrann Mathieu. This is a program that has never been shy about embracing individuals. They're the program that, by brand, produces like hype reels for guys like Joe Burrow. There were like not one, but three distinct installments of an entire video series that LSU did on Joe Burrow throughout that season, right? It's a place where he comes out with the like Cajun spelled Burrow with the E-A-U-X at the end, right? And shows it off to the crowd, and they let him do that. You know, there are other programs that wouldn't really like highlight other individual players that much or have like a tradition of individual players wearing the same number like they have at LSU. It's a place where if Brian Kelly, this is all my way of getting around to saying, if Brian Kelly gets on someone's ass on the cameras, it's going to be a little bit different at LSU and everyone else because there are a lot of people who might actually identify with the player in that case. I don't know if you're familiar with Brian Kelly, but among other things, he's the guy who was captured on camera shooting a middle finger at Tommy Rees after he threw a pick. You know, that's probably like personally, I like to put all my cards on the table. I don't like the dude. I don't like, I don't know anyone who's like, wow, yeah, what a fun guy. What a great hang that guy is. He's very good at his job, but like, you know, if you see him, he's the coach I've seen blame players most. Say this for Nick Saban. Nick Saban would get up, and as anyone who's worked one of those parabolic field mics can tell you, the things he says to people during games border on like NC-17 plus. Like nobody is more scathing, direct, and honest to players, coaches, everyone during a game than Nick Saban. At the same time, after the game, that is not the dude who will ever say anything but it's on me. It's like one voice, focus on me, that's it. Nobody else gets blamed, right? I'm not going to single out a player. Like Nick doesn't do that. Same Brian Kelly do that. How's that going to go over in Baton Rouge? Because you know what else Baton Rouge people aren't? They don't have a simple relationship with authority. And just because your coach says it doesn't mean anyone's going to respect it. Shouts out to LSU Twitter, by the way, who has challenged every single opinion anyone has ever had about their program and others every single day for the past 10 years.
Yes, yes. Look, I'm just here for it. One thing I give LSU, for the last 15 years, it's always been fun. One way or another, it's always been fun. They are the most interesting program in America. They are actually, I've said this in years past, and I think this actually still holds. They have the best chance of being like a modern Miami of anybody else just because of their geographic dominance of a high talent area where they can get all those guys. Like they're always, The floor for what your talent level is going to be at LSU, I think, is higher than the floor anywhere else. You are never going to be able to blame the players or blame the roster, because anybody could get a decent roster down there. Nobody else is going. Nobody else can make that call. Now, I will say there was one player. The only player I've ever seen like LSU fans really dislike was Jordan Jefferson. And I feel like they didn't really fully come to dislike him until he messed it up for the Honey Badger that time he got caught jumping that fence. And then people, whoever decided to come snitch and knock on the door just because they were smoking weed.
I think that too. Like, think about that. That's player based, isn't it? It wasn't just an abstract, like, we don't like that guy, or because he lost some games, because Jordan Jefferson lost some very weird games as starter. He also won some very weird games as a starter, okay? Like, maybe the most perpetually unusual starting quarterback in the history of the Southeastern Conference is Jordan Jefferson, because you look at the games he won and you go, wow, that's weird. Dude did not do one thing normal. The reason they didn't like him was because, yeah, they messed it up for a player they loved, another guy, right? Like, I think they have a somewhat unique sense of loyalty to the player, which I do think is a little bit unique. Like, that's unique. Alabama, it's not monolithic, but on the whole, you know, the team is the team. And if you are an impediment, well, next man up, we got a guy, right? LSU is a little bit different. So I want to see that tested. I don't want to see LSU be anything but fun. And frankly, I think that the machine and the milieu that they exist in probably mean that that's impossible. You can't ruin that, right? Like, I can't see Brian Kelly having a flattening effect on Louisiana. You don't stop Louisiana happening. You're just going to have this very, very grumpy former cop in the middle of it, just mad as hell about everything.
Yeah, I'm going to hit you with this last thing as we're coming up on the time. And I forget who I saw make this point, but I thought it was a great one. Part of what happened with Lincoln Riley not going to LSU points something out, which is there's a marketplace here, right? And there is something to be said about the idea that some markets can, in fact, guide themselves, right? There's something there. Ain't but so many people signing up for the SEC meat grinder, period, right? Like, you're only going to have so many coaches of the Lincoln Riley level who, by the way, may have gotten out ahead of the cavalry at OU when you really stop and think about it, right? Because they're not thrilled with what they're getting with him. They know it's better than they're going to get with most people, but this isn't like if Bob Stoops had gone, right? Like, they're not. The flaws of Lincoln Riley as head coach has started to make themselves clear over the course of the last couple years after you got farther away from Stoops, right? But ain't but so many of guys who coach on that level going to be willing to go sign up with, yeah, I mean, every now and then you go 8-4. Like, what's the big deal? It happens, guys. No, ain't too many people trying to do that. By the way, oh yeah, Florida get a coach, but they hired Napier, right?
Listen, our veteran coach, Napier, he's been on the job at least 4 days. Time of airing. Florida managed to look, like, that's how messed up this coaching cycle is, but we managed to have Florida look normal. Tennessee and Kentucky and Arkansas. That's how completely upside down this environment is.
What I love about Kentucky, Mark Stoops just signed an extension. And an extension that comes with incentives for winning 7 games. And you know why? They know who they are. What Mark Stoops has done there has not led them to believe, all right, now how are we going to get this up to 10? No, they're like, yo, we would love to continue winning 7 games.
That is correct. Would you like to lose a pound a month? In 2 years, you're going to be pretty fit. That's Kentucky's modest plan. And that's beautiful. I love it. I love that Kentucky's like, listen, we'll save all of the extremely manic, intense rage for John Calipari. We'll save it for the basketball program. On football, we get to be our best selves. We get to be our sane selves. We get to be like, we love our big, beefy, athletic boys who are going to win somewhere between 7 and 8 games. We can get crazy and win 9, you know?
They're present. That's what it is. They are present. When it comes to football, they are present.
Like, I cannot believe I'm at this point. Like, I am a Florida fan, and I cannot believe I am at the point where dude shows up and he absolutely snoozes the presser. Like, he snoozes. Like, Billy Napier up there is just a whole bunch of no-dos. I thought, oh, that's great. What are you talking about? Well, we're going to be organized and we're going to be methodical, and I'm going to bore everyone to death in this press conference. I'm like, great.
Yeah, basically.
Are you dressing up like Darth Vader?
That's right. That's all the way. He just need to get up there and be like, look, dude, I get players. Ask about me. I'm waiting for somebody to become the head coach and just be like, look, I'm going to get players. one way or another, and we gonna work that shit out from there. Like, the key there is one way or another. I want somebody to say that out loud. You, if there's anything you ain't gotta worry about, we gonna have players at this place. So what's your recruiting strategy? By any means necessary.
Just walk up, put the bag on the table.
Yes. Yeah, somebody come out there. You see what this is? This is a bag. Just putting it out there. Just letting you know.
Every question like that. So what's your spring practice plan? Bags.
Yeah, I'm ready. Like, who's the coach that's going to finally get this job and be like, yo, so what is your plan? Well, the first thing I'm doing is hiring Trooper Taylor. And for those of you who don't know, Trooper Taylor used to work at Auburn. Like, he was their big recruiter when they brought Cam Newton in. So you understand what is kind of being intimated here in this discussion. Like, I want somebody to get all those guys, right? Names that most people don't know. And I don't even want to throw them out here necessarily. But just somebody just to come out there. This is going to be my recruiting staff. No, we're not even going to actually have an offensive coordinator. I'm just going to have a squad full of, what are they, running backs coaches. It's going to be a bunch of running backs coaches and D-line coaches. The D-line coach is also the one that's asked to do these things.
Wait, who's your big X's and O's guy? X's and what? We put him on the field and give him the ball. That is very much like somebody will. I mean, I think people have already done that to one extent or another. But it's fascinating to me to see a hire at a place like Florida, which values flash and values scoring a billion points, and quietly managed to sort of get everything a little bit of everything they wanted in one dude, including, by the way, a guy who has my favorite thing, which is he says the word program. He does not say the word program. He does not. He says program. And immediately when you say program, you're like, it's an SEC coach who says the word program. Oh, my trust levels just bump up a little bit, just ever so high. One more thing about the bag transfer market. You know where Mel Tucker is a genius? Transfer portal is Spackle. You got a hole in that wall? Transfer it. Transfer portal it. Just put it up there. Get a couple of guards. Go get a safety. Hey, look, we got new guys. Roster's totally different. Have one dude. This is someone's job now, by the way, is to monitor the transfer portal 24/7 and just, if a dude pops up on it, can we get him? Is he good?
Yeah, Mel Tucker is the Joe of college football. I'll take you the places he will not. It's just all it is. Like, hey, I hear things aren't going so well for you back at the house.
Why don't you come on over?
I know. Let me tell you, I saw a picture before we get out of here. Did you see this picture that had been bouncing around? It was Mel Tucker and his wife hanging out with Magic Johnson. And his wife, because Magic's, the Michigan State guy. And what I love about Magic and what jumped out to me about that is, like, Magic ain't the dude that's going to be out here in the red, black, and green and marching with the police or whatever it is. But Magic is absolutely the, oh, we got a black coach at Michigan State? Come on over to the crib. Like, he's like, yeah, I know what it is, man. Like, Magic is that dude. Magic is like, yeah, brother, come on in.
Yeah, let's see. Let's go. Oh, yeah. Hey, look, the whole family's there.
Yes. Dude, we 30 years ago, we was putting Magic in the ground. Magic is living the greatest life of anybody I could possibly think of. I can't think of anybody living better than Magic Johnson.
He still had the best. I'm quitting.
Yes, yes, yes. Why are you quitting? So I can go back to being Magic Johnson. What a great answer. What a great reason. Why is everything about that great? Everything.
Like, I want to go back to making extremely basic tweets. Like, if you go, he's like, I can finally say, like, Magic Johnson unchained, and his first tweets when he quits are like, wow, Lakers playing great. That's it. Like,
yes.
Magic was just like, yeah, responsibility sucks.
Yes, yes.
And I don't have to.
Yes, wild overrated. But yo, that is Spencer Hall. Check him out on Channel 6. Check out Thinking Out Loud, noon Eastern on the SEC Network on Saturday for the SEC Championship. And shut down full cast. He got a whole lot of stuff. Google Spencer Hall. You'll come up with it. I appreciate it, sir.
We'll do an Back in Black. Back in Black's their first album.
I think we can make that work. Let's think about that. Let's see what the people say.
Think about that? Okay.
Yeah, let's see what the people say, because I got to make sure the black people come too. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's that.
Yeah, you consult with your counsel. I'll consult with mine. We'll do it.
All good. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassane and Adi Khan handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us. Review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.